grateful to take these weekend services. I'm grateful to be some small help to our superb rector, Libby, and grateful to be amongst you, this parish family, which is home to Peggy and myself, and a place that we cherish, a community that we are deeply committed to. Now, as we begin to consider these Gospels and their possible impact upon our lives, and what all of that may say to us as a parish family on this patronal feast of St. Mary, I would ask you to consider something at first very sobering. I cannot say that I've been haunted by it. I haven't been haunted by it, but it has remained very much a constant, an inspiring thought as I reflected on my own faith. This Episcopal church of ours, its 8,000 parishes and missions, a church I so deeply love. And as I think on this sometimes flawed but nevertheless exceptional nation of ours, what I refer to is the grace, the forgiveness, and the extraordinary love. Love above all else, reflected after those awful shootings at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina. The response of that parish family to this tragedy, for this preacher, is a perfect example of the living bread our Lord refers to in the John Gospels. Not literal bread that nourishes the body, but bread which nourishes, inspires, and gives final meaning and purpose to the human soul. Yours, mine. The 21-year-old accused of the murders wandered into a group of Christians studying the scriptures. By his own admission, he was warmly welcomed. At his arraignment the next morning, family members appeared in the courtroom, speaking directly to the accused. Each spoke of their pain and miraculously of their forgiveness. Nadine Collier, the daughter of one of the victims, church sexton Ethel Lance, said, and I quote, "You took something very precious away from me. I will never talk to her again. I will never be able to hold her again. But I forgive you, and I have mercy on your soul," end quote. The granddaughter of retired pastor Daniel Simmons spoke for many of the grieving families when she declared in these remarkable words, these theologically packed sentences, when she declared that hate would not be allowed to ultimately win out. And again, I quote, "Although my grandfather and other victims died at the hands of hate, everyone's plea for your soul is proof that they lived in love and that their legacies would live in love." It's worth repeating. Everyone's plea for your soul is proof that they lived in love and their legacies will live in love. The church was open the next day for prayer and for counseling for the whole community surrounding that place. Immediately, the Emmanuel leadership began to work in a very deliberate, hands-on way with the city officials, with the police, to avoid the kind of violence that had so recently evidenced itself in Ferguson, in Cleveland, and Baltimore. Mother Emmanuel, as the church is known throughout the city, was formed by slaves in 1816. It has suffered many tragedies throughout its ministry. This was not the first. Burnings, vandalism, and even city ordinances denying blacks the right to gather on Sunday morning for worship. But despite that history and these recent events, Mother Emmanuel has a remarkable record of what it means to be the true church, to manifest Christianity at its purest and at its best, and to be the bread of life for all of us. Specifically, to be literal mirrors of God's love in the face of an awful human depravity. To be ministers of reconciliation to a world badly broken at virtually every juncture. To be a means of healing from unimaginable pain and loss. And to be bread to each of us who somewhere, privately, deep within ourselves, hunger. Do we not, all of us, hunger for a world where peace, justice, reconciliation, forgiveness, and in summary and above all else, love are made known and are allowed to triumph and to reign? And here it seems leads to the challenge for the preacher, and for each of us at St. Mary's on this great feast day. Just as Jesus, in John's poetic terms, is the bread of life, giving life to generations through his wisdom, his selfless compassion, his humble servanthood, and his boundless, irrepressible, life-ennobling, and life-fulfilling love, we are called, each of us, to do the same. Just as Mother Emmanuel and her people have freely given that spiritual bread of love to this nation, to every one of its churches and every one of its people, we are called to do the same. We give bread to the world each time we embrace that same spirit by looking beyond our own needs and pain, no matter how real they may be, to the ultimate good of others, consciously nourishing all of life in the love of the gospel, in that love which rests at the epicenter of the love story, which is the life, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. We are bread to the world every time we reject revenge, aggression, and retaliation. We are bread to the world every time we consciously seek to engage in that mysterious joy and delight, despite the pain, despite the difficulty, which so often attends our consciously acting out the Christian faith in and through our lives. That joy, that delight, which comes in serving God and even on Good Friday. Now, with all that in mind, may I suggest a fresh effort to be followed this week, each day, for you. And most certainly for the preacher. I suspect it is an effort that had been deeply, deeply ingrained with those in the parish family of Mother Emmanuel. I'm sure it's what their children were raised up with. It was a part of every sermon preached and most of the prayers rendered in that sacred space. I suspect that it was ultimately what was behind their ability to respond as they did. And I am certain it is a formula suggested by this gospel. What if, after folding our hands this morning and receiving living bread, living wine, we rose and we moved away, intent upon engaging every relationship, every task, with this one question: what would love do? What would love do? I ask you this morning, I'm just this bold and just this old, perhaps as never before in your life or in mine, what if we left this holy table, having received these mysteries, and with a deliberate intent, as never before demonstrated in our life, practiced everything in the days ahead with a simple question: what would love do? What if we were to look upon those millions of Syrian refugees, and especially those beautiful children who are pressed to the borders of that land and dwell in those refugee camps, and we were to ask of ourselves, what would love do? What if we were to gaze at some neighbor's crippling loneliness or illness or estrangement and ask of ourselves, what would love do? What if we, this week, radically rearranged that most precious commodity? And I venture in the 21st century for Americans, it will be a commodity more valuable than money and possessions. What if we were to radically change our attitude toward our time and how it is used, and ask at the same time, what would love do? What if we silently, known only to ourselves, moved within ourselves and gazed upon some long festering inability to forgive, to forgive perhaps another person, and perhaps our inability to forgive ourselves, and ask, what would love do? I suspect, been a priest now 46 years, the 71st year of my life. I don't suspect, I know, we will live far differently, far better, and we will be bread for the world. What say you in your own heart and mind? As perhaps never before, shall we leave here, nourished by this sacrament, and give it a fresh try, keeping in mind that great truth demonstrated by Christ and of late by Mother Emmanuel. As Philip Larkin, in the final line of his remarkable tune, An Arundel Tomb, so beautifully reminds us, for what will survive us is love. What will survive us is love.